Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, and we're joined by an extraordinary individual today who's been a longtime prepper, and his website is called formingcommunities.com. And he offers some hope for how we navigate these very difficult times that we're moving through right now that will require more than just being a lone prepper or a lone survivalist. His name is Stefan Verstappen, and he joins us today. Welcome, Stefan. It's great to have you on the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Mike. I've been a big fan of yours for many years, and actually, I've been meaning to contact you for years now, but I just never got around to it.
Well, no worries. My producers were able to reach you, and we got you on today, so we've got a lot to talk about. First of all, can I get your just a little intro from you for our audience, since this is the first time we've had you on the show?
Okay. So I'm Canadian, born and raised in Toronto, Canada. At an early age, I became concerned about surviving the nuclear apocalypse. You know, when my parents bought the first home here in Canada back in 1963, one of the options that you had for buying a home was whether or not you wanted a fallout shelter.
Oh, wow. Back.
Yeah. So you could have a two-car garage, you could have a deck, or you could have a fallout shelter. Because this was around the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis. And everybody was really concerned about there was going to be a nuclear war. Now, growing up as a child in the 60s and as a teenager in the 70s, we were inundated with fear porn. You know how the government is. They want everybody to be scared all the time. Now, way back then, the fear porn centered around nuclear annihilation.
Uh-huh.
And we had the book at the school everybody was reading was On the Beach. And so that's what we were all worried about. We were pretty much told that we're all going to die in a nuclear holocaust. So at that age, I started, and I'm talking about 12, I started becoming a prepper. Back then, there was no such thing as a prepper. The term hadn't been coined yet, so we called ourselves survivalists. And I had my first bug out bag when I was, 13.
That's great.
Yeah.
Bugging out from mom and dad's house.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to leave them behind. They weren't ready for it.
All right. And then since then, we've seen this extraordinary transition where we even have, for example, now in 2024, we have the German government telling its citizens to build bunkers. We have the whole concept now of being a survivalist is no longer a fringe thing, not after COVID, not after, war with Russia and all this talk of nuclear war. Would you say it's kind of gone a lot more mainstream? I mean, Costco selling like survival kits and so on?
Oh, yeah, it's gone way, way more mainstream, especially since my days back in the 70s and 80s. Which is a good thing, I suppose. Nothing wrong with being prepped. I was also a Boy Scout, and what's the motto of the Boy Scouts?
Be prepared.
Yeah, so it's a good thing. I mean, you should be prepared anyways. There's all kinds of natural disasters that can occur, earthquakes, storms, floods. We've seen them all in the past year or two. Snowstorms that can knock the power out for weeks. Well, you better have food in the house. You better have some candles. So being prepared is an intelligent thing to do. And also, our ancestors, our grandparents, they were preppers.
Yes.
They had to figure out how to survive the winters up here, which is brutal. And they had to do a lot of things that modern preppers do, stockpile food for 4 months, 5 months. They had to learn canning and preserving and making their own, purifying their own water. And so they had to do a lot of things. And we were spoiled for a time, and I guess we still are, because we now have everything at our fingertips. What Max Egan always calls the truckitarians. Everything's brought to us on a truck, which is nice and dandy. But what happens if those trucks aren't working anymore, they don't have gas, or they're closed down, or the fuel's run out, then you've got like 2-day 2 days in which to stock up as much as you can, and then that's going to be it. So better to be prepared now.
Yeah. Well, that reminded me what you just said there. It's astonishing to me how few people actually prepare, even when, for example, hurricanes are known to be approaching. We see this in Florida all the time. 24 hours before the hurricane is going to hit, the water supplies are wiped out in the stores. And, you know, I have so many questions, like, number one, what, you don't have water at home? You don't have a water filter? Well, how come you didn't already have water? And secondly, why did you wait for the last 24 hours? It's been a 10-day forecast of this hurricane, right?
Right, right. No, so listen, being prepared is sensible. It's logical. There's nothing paranoid about it. You don't have to be a conspiracy theorist. You know, like when I lived in Taiwan, yeah, we had typhoons and earthquakes, you know. So you needed stuff in the house because the typhoon was coming. And then there was no chance to run to the store. So it's just common sense and nothing irrational about it. But thing is now, what we are facing is far more serious than just a natural disaster. I'll tell you what scares me, Mike. What scares me, and I'm going to mention a word here that probably many people don't know, and that word is democide.
Ah.
D-M-O-C-I-D-E. Now, democide means death by government. It means being murdered by your own government. And in the last century, conservative estimate is that 239 million people were murdered by their own governments. This is more than all the casualties in all the wars, World War I, World War II, more than all those casualties combined, people that are murdered by their own government. Now, what worries me is the people that did most of those murders, I'm talking the Bolsheviks, the Communist Chinese, the Khmer Rouge, you know, most of those people are still around today. People like are still around today. And they murdered 239 million people in the last century. And I worry they're going to do the same thing now. Remember, your worst enemy is your own government. The chances of you being murdered by an invading army, has especially here in North America, has been like non-existent, except until now, where recently we've been importing our very own invading army.
Right. As so, illegals. But I agree with what you just said, and I'm familiar with that research. I think it was out of the University of Hawaii that put those numbers out there. And you're right, 239 million, I think, was the low estimate, and it goes up from there. But there's an interesting contrast here, where even though more and more people are aware of some of the possible threats that they may be facing, including, by the way, from their own government now. You know, we see in America, in the United States, more and more people extremely angry at the border invasion situation. But yet we have in all of human history, our populations today are the least practical in terms of real world skills. Like many, especially younger people, don't know how to change tires on vehicles or how to repair clothing or how to run a sewing machine or just basic skills that, you know, you and I probably grew up learning things like that, you know, gardening, a little bit of sewing, a little bit of repair. Otherwise, that's the only way we could have stuff around was to keep fixing it, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I always try to mentor young men where I can because, you know, I'm a kung fu instructor. I have been teaching for over 40 years, and I get a lot of young men that want to learn from me. And the first thing I do is teach them how to hike and how to fix things and how to be self-reliant. You know, I'm not... You know, before I teach you how to do a spinning outside crescent kick, can you go for a walk in the forest and not get lost?
Yeah.
The answer is no, they can't. I'm not kidding.
Amazing.
My I've had so many cases like that. I had a young man come over. I said, this is when I was living in Ventura, California. I said, well, I'm going to go bicycle up into the mountains, up into the Sierra Madres. If you want to come along, then bring your bike. So he brought his bike over, and he said, oh, there's something wrong with my bike. It's broken. And I looked at it. I said, well, the chain's fallen off the sprocket. And he says, oh, well, can that be fixed?
What?
I know, Mike. You know, like, I showed him. I said, okay, look, see the chain? Lift it up with your finger. Bring it up over, put it on the sprocket, fixed. Okay. Yeah. So then he said, well, there's something else wrong with the bike. I said, yeah, both your tires are flat. Well, can that be? I'm talking a 31-year-old man, Mike.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Man. So I gave him my bicycle pump. Every time I go for a bicycle ride, I have a little survival kit, and I also carry my own, bicycle repair kit and flat repair kit. And a hand pump. So I said, here you go. He looks at it and goes, what's this?
Oh, my.
You know, we're talking about two generations of people that can't do anything, Mike. They can't do anything. But
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I did a podcast a while ago, and I told people, look, you need to get a foot bicycle pump and have it in your car as an emergency way to pump up your car tires. Yep. And at first I got a lot of kickback pushback from people that said, you can't pump up a car tire with a foot pump, a bicycle pump. I'm like, well, of course you can. It's only like 35 PSI. I mean, you just have to have the right valve, the Schwinn valve or whatever the standard bicycle valve, not the Presta valve, but the other one. Just have, mm-hmm. I mean, it's the default pump. You just get a pump, you put it in your car. And people driving around trying to find quarters and trying to go to a gas station to put quarters in the machine. Like, you could have pumped that up yourself in 5 minutes with your own bicycle pump. But yeah. People don't even know this. Shocking to me.
No, I know, Mike. It's really sad. And especially with what's coming. I mean, if the supply chain breaks down, and of course we expect that to happen, not only the food supply, but everything else, parts. I'm already hearing stories that people can't get parts. They got to wait 6 months to get a part to fix their car. So listen, if you can't fix that yourself, well, you're going to be pretty much helpless.
Yeah.
The people in my generation are a little bit older than me. I'm 67 now. So the people in my generation, we knew how to do that all ourselves. We all worked our own cars. If the muffler needed changing, we would do it ourselves. We'd go to the store, we'd buy the muffler, we'd fix it in the driveway.
Right.
Same thing with the alternator or the fuel or the water pump or whatever. We did all that work ourselves. It wasn't rocket science. You had a good socket wrench set and off you go.
Yeah.
But nowadays, they don't know any of that anymore. That's why one of the other things I'm trying to do with the community, with what we're doing is mentorship programs. Sending a kid to university, just burn the money. But why would you send somebody to university? They're going to come back a communist tranny or something like that. A complete waste of time.
Yep.
But mentorship programs was the traditional way where people learned, right?
All that experience serves us well. And I'm glad you have mentorship programs. I want to ask you, just to change gears a little bit, though, sure. What do you assess, based on what you know right now and what you've seen, what do you think is the greatest risk that would require survival skills? Like, what are the most likely scenarios that people are going to face?
Well, I came out with a video not too long ago saying that we are at war. And I also wrote an article for the Trends Journal, our friend Gerald Celente.
Yes.
And that was actually on the Alex Jones show. Not me, my article. They were discussing, Gerald was on there and they were leafing through the magazine and they were focusing on my article, which is Historical Cycles, Are We Doomed to Repeat the Past? And it's basically a quick summary of history, how every civilization goes through a natural cyclic period, right? Basically spring, summer, fall, and winter. And then it collapses. And when it collapses, you enter into a period of chaos. So we are definitely in the winter of our civilization. You can see it all around you. This is not something new to anybody who's got their eyes open. Look at how everything has deteriorated and been degraded, and it's become degenerate. It's just, look, it's all falling apart. Now, what will eventually happen is, and what's the greatest threat to us, is a breakdown in the chains of distribution. Number one, food. That's why in our community we have teams, and one of our teams is the garden team. We aim to become completely self-sufficient in terms of food, and we are. We are, Mike. It's amazing the work our community has done. Then the other thing is going to be medicine. So medicine is another important aspect, and that's what we're doing with our community. We have a medical team. We aim to supply our own medical needs. Now,
let me ask you, I mean, that's fascinating that you've been able to put all of that together, but most importantly for our audience, you teach how to build these communities. And I'd like you to talk about that for a minute, because on your website, it's the complete guide to forming communities. You know, that is your website, formingcommunities.com. And this is something that people can purchase and get the lectures and so on. But give us a taste of sort of what, well, let me ask it this way. I do want to get a taste of what's in your course, but I also want you to address the fact that, like, I've seen a lot of community projects that just completely were catastrophic failures, and people's egos got involved and somebody thought they were the king. And man, I've seen that time and time again. Even these utopia projects, people want to get together. Let's form a utopia and we'll all grow weed, you know, and those things collapse faster than anything else. What's your experience on communities?
Yeah, the same as you have, Mike. You know, because I've been doing this for about, you know, forming communities for the last 15 years. Most of the time, I've been unable to do anything positive. Mind you, I lived in the big city. The big cities is a bad place to do this. Just, it doesn't work out. Where I am now is a rural community, and we have a lot of Amish and Mennonites, a lot of farms.
Oh, that's great.
And I got to tell you, people in small towns living in a rural community, they have a different mentality. Our community is completely democratic. We meet every week. Everybody just cooperates. And so far, so good. We do not have the usual internal squabbles that will destroy a community that you've obviously seen, Mike, firsthand.
Yeah, but let me ask you then, how will your community interact with people in a crisis when there's a flood of non-preppers who show up and they demand your supplies? Like, have you had discussions about how you're going to deal with that?
Yes, we've discussed that. First of all, number one, our community is ultra secret. Operational security, OPSEC. We don't have a website. We don't have a Facebook page. We don't have any presence on the internet whatsoever. I just used ChatGPT to see if there's any information on our community, and there's nothing. We're not, and also, we don't allow people to bring cell phones to the meetings.
Oh, wow.
Well, because the cell phone's always on. They're always listening.
Yes.
So you have to do that, because otherwise, oh, well, if the shit hits the fan and everybody knows, oh, well, there they are out over there. They're in Oxford County. Let's go get their food. Well, you know, that's not something you can deal with if you have 1,000 people showing up and, you know, trying to take advantage of the food supplies 100 people put together. So you, first of all, you have to be under the radar. And what I recommend in my course and in my writings is that if you're going to put something together, don't call it the freedom cells. Because you're going to track every FBI agent within 500 miles to come and visit you. You know, you should call it Aunt Betty's Knitting Club.
Right.
Right? Look, it doesn't matter what you call yourself. It's what you do. You know, all this yippity-yap, yippity-yap. Most important is what you do. So I can call myself, you know, the Audubon Society of Oxford or anything like that that's nondescript, non-threatening. Then what we do when we get together is, yeah, we garden, we set up medical systems, we have a security team, we have a communications team, we do homeschooling, we do Meals on Wheels, we do all those things. But we just call it Aunt Betty's Knitting Club. So that's one thing. Also, people that want to come into the society, they are first recommended by a member. Okay? So you can't look us up and come and visit us. We don't have a presence. There's no address. There's no, like I said, no Facebook page, nothing like that. So it's only people that we know, and that's how I was introduced too. I knew one of the members. They knew me, and they knew the work I was doing, and they trusted me. You know, I have I'm reputable, and so they invited me to join, and I was happy to join. So that's one thing. Now, the other point that you brought up is, what do you do when there's a lot of hungry people? And I've already brought this up at a couple of our meetings already 2-3 years ago, because other members brought that up. They said, well, you know, we're growing so much food and we've got some, what do we do? And I said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to do just like we would if we were a church, and we're going to tithe. And that means we will keep 10% and we'll set that aside for the greater community.
Yeah. Okay. But Stefan, and then what? What happens when that 10% runs out?
We're working on long-term sustainability.
Uh-huh.
So we're always going to have that 10%. It's
but
not
I mean,
that
do you
food and that's it.
Do you go to these people and say, okay, you know, like we can feed you for 6 months, but you're going to have to start growing food with us. So here, grab a rake, learn how to garden, you know, get involved. Is it a meritocracy in that sense? Or is there always going to be some kind of system of handouts to people who don't participate?
No. It has to be a meritocracy. Listen, we can hand out, you know, let's say 3 months, right? So, you know, same where I live here, there's lots of kids and families. I've got probably a year and a half worth of food stockpiled. And all of our members also, not only do we have communal gardens, but all our members have backyard gardens. So they all grow their own food. They're all pretty much independent from just using their own backyards. And the other thing, too, is it's really important to make friends with the local farmers.
Yes.
Go to the farmer's market, get to know them and support them.
Absolutely. And I want to mention the CSAs, you know, community supported agriculture. So we have a lot of CSAs across the continental United States as well that people can participate in that. Just
yes.
Like you were saying, for maybe like $75 every couple of weeks, you get a big box of fresh produce. I mean, it varies from farm to farm. But Stefan, as we're just about out of time, we're going to wrap this up. What would you say is the number one thing that the number one gap in mainstream people's lack of preparedness? Like, what's the first thing that they should look at? And like, if someone's watching this and they're like, I'm not a prepper, I haven't done any of this, where should they begin?
They should begin with focusing on becoming as self-sufficient in food as they can.
Food.
Yeah, because I read a lot of history, and everything that we've come up with and everything that I teach in my course is based on my study of history. What did our great-great-grandparents do? How did they survive? They survived by forming mutual aid societies, friendly societies, fraternal societies. They didn't form communes, okay? Forget about communes. Everybody lived in their own house. It's just that they pooled their money and their efforts together. We volunteer our time to work in the garden. We just had a meeting last Thursday. Okay, who's going to volunteer to water the garden this year? Who's going to volunteer to weed it? Who's going to volunteer to aerate the soil? Who's going to volunteer to harvest it? People put in their own hours, a couple hours a week, and you get a ton of food out of that garden. So that's one of the first things, because my study of history shows that starvation, the people that run this world, use starvation as a weapon. So one of
absolutely.
The things.
Yeah.
So number one is, first of all, as a prepper, make sure you stockpile about a year's supply worth of food, okay? Then at least you've got a little bit of play, a little bit of leeway, right? So
right.
Now what are you going to do? Now you're going to start growing a garden? You don't have time. So you need, you know, that 6 months where you can still survive. And now we start raising chickens. And now we start gardening and doing what we can become self-sustainable food-wise. Now, perfect. I know a lot of the preppers, it's all about, oh, how many guns do you have? That's really low on our priority list is the guns. We've got a couple guys, myself included. We got some guns. Okay. But that's not really what I'm worried about. What I'm worried about is food self-sufficiency and medicine, number two. What if you get sick? What if you get double pneumonia? Do you have enough antibiotics?
Well, yeah, but you live in Canada. People aren't as violent there as they are where we are in America. That's why, I mean, I'm coming to you from Texas here. Everybody's armed to the teeth, man.
Yeah, I like that.
Because of the expectation of violence and civil unrest and cities collapsing and refugees spilling out of the cities and trying to raid people's food. But, yep. You know, hey, America is the number one country in the world of gun ownership per capita. It's more good. Than one gun per citizen, by the yep. way. So, Stefan, we need to wrap this up. We're out of time for today. I want to give okay. out your website again. This has been fascinating. Thank you for sharing this information.
Oh, you're welcome, Mike. Thanks for having me on. Like I said, I'm a big fan. I've been meaning to call you and get on your show for months, years.
Well, I'm glad you made it today. Formingcommunities.com is the website. The complete guide to forming communities is something that you can get there and learn from some of his other articles that are also in, as you said earlier, the Trends Journal with Gerald Celente and other sources, other videos and so on. Stefan, thank you for your time today. Thank you for your wisdom and what you're doing. I love the mentorship program that you mentioned and how you're helping to build resilient local communities that can make it through anything that's coming.
Well, thanks for having me on again, Mike, and we should do it again soon.
We shall, and thank you for your time, and the pleasure's all mine. We appreciate you, your wisdom, and your contributions, and I'm sure all the people in your community appreciate what you're doing. So thank you for your time again today. And for those of you watching, feel free to repost this interview on other channels and platforms as well. As always, you have our permission to do so. Of course, this platform is also at your service, brighteon.com. You can post videos, create a channel there. And maybe one day, Brighteon videos won't be censored on X, too. We'll see if we can make that happen. In the meantime, thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams, also a lifetime prepper here and the founder of brighteon.com. Take care, everybody. I want to show you what we have put together here in terms of our really popular, now wheat-free, certified organic, lab-tested macaroni and cheese meal mixes. I've got them on my desk here. The way we sell them, it's in a mini bucket format. You see the bottom ones there. And inside each bucket are three of these packs right here, which is, you know, vacuum-packed. It's nitrogen-flooded and then vacuumed in a very rugged, long-term, stable bag. This is wheat-free. It's made out of amaranth as well as quinoa. And so this holds its shape and texture and tastes really great. It's not like gritty and mushy like whole wheat macaroni tends to be. So we have this, and then this is a cheese pack that's also very durable, rugged packing. And this, you know, no garbage, no artificial colors, no fillers, nothing like that. And in the cheese pack are very simple certified organic ingredients. Check it out. Organic white cheddar powder, organic heavy cream powder, organic butter powder, organic whey protein powder, organic onion powder, and organic black pepper powder. And that's it, folks. There's no fillers, no artificial flavors, no artificial colors. I mean, no colors of any kind actually in it. And it's very easy to make. It's extremely delicious. Now, it does not have any salt added. We did that on purpose because we wanted people to be able to salt it according to your own taste. So for those having a low sodium diet, you can easily incorporate this. I mean, check the nutrition facts label. It still does have sodium naturally in the cheese, but we did not add any salt. So it can be incorporated into a low sodium diet if that's something that you're paying attention to. For the rest of us, I add salt to this, by the way, and I don't normally add salt to anything, but this is so low in the salt because we didn't add any salt to the recipe that I think you actually have to add a little bit of salt to bring out the flavor and make it taste really delicious. And then it does when you add a little bit of salt to it. So this is, all you got to do is boil water. You know, you boil the elbows for 5 to 10 minutes, and then you add in the cheese powder, you stir it in, you're done. And it's super delicious. This is a really great preparedness meal. I think you'll really love this. We also have, this is very popular. It is an organic banana, peanut butter, and chocolate instant superfood shake. Now, this product, which is available in various quantities, if you go to our store, you can just buy, you know, one canister, or you can buy them in groups. This also is very delicious, but very simple. Look at the ingredients. Organic whey protein powder, banana powder, also organic, peanut butter powder, cocoa powder, coconut sugar, which is a low glycemic sweetener. And that's it, folks. It's all organic. It's laboratory certified. It's super delicious. It blends with water or other kinds of milks. You know, it could be a nut milk or a cow's milk or whatever you want. It's delicious, hot or cold. And it's incredibly nutritious and very clean because we do all the testing. So these are two relatively new products, well, brand new actually, that are in stock right now, at least at the moment, and will probably be sold out of them pretty quickly, but we'll make more. It just takes time to source all these ingredients. It took us many months to get the cheddar cheese powder and the organic cream powder, the butter powder, and the whey. I mean, frankly, all the animal products are taking a very long time to get sourced right now, but we're doing the best we can. We have these available, super delicious. And this is just the first of many kind of instant meals that we're formulating right now. So macaroni and cheese is one of many that we'll have soon. We're going to have different kind of soups, like a lentil soup and also an organic chili product. And they're all going to be based on the same kind of philosophy. Clean, simple, lab-tested ingredients with no artificial anything whatsoever. And also very lower sodium compared to what's typically out there. Because I don't know about you, but I don't want to just eat a bunch of salt and MSG, you know? That's what a lot of storable food is, just a bunch of salt and sugar and MSG and textured vegetable protein garbage. And we're not into that, not at all. This is real food, real nutrition, real taste, and it's available right now at healthrangerstore.com. Just go there. You can search for peanut butter to find our chocolate, banana, peanut butter shake, or if you want the macaroni and cheese, just go to healthrangerstore.com and search for the organic wheat-free macaroni and cheese with no salt added. Or check out our hundreds of other products, such as, like, you can look at herbs right here, all these different categories, different herbs and tinctures. We have garden seeds. We have superfoods. We have personal care products. Here we have organic turmeric gold extract. We have the knives, the Dawson knives. I've co-designed these with Dawson knives. You probably heard about these. This is under preparedness, survival gear. We've got, well, let me just show you. We've got all the different knives right here made of the corrosion-resistant MagnaCut alloy. Mass ratio is one, very popular. That's back in stock now. Consequences covert knife and more. We've got other knives available, including Escape from LA. Hey, I wonder, is that sold out? Hard to keep in stock. But check it all out at healthrangerstore.com. This is how you can support us. And then we give back to you in a multitude of ways with knowledge, with empowerment, with the large language model we're going to be giving away here soon, coming up end of March, with all the interviews and all the things that we do. Plus, we just made a $100,000 donation to Convoy of Hope of non-GMO vitamin C. So when we are able to, we buy an extra large batch of raw materials, and then we use our in-house manufacturing and testing, and we will overproduce certain batches, knowing that we can use Convoy of Hope to distribute them to people in need And it's a Christian-based ministry that distributes food and supplements. And we've worked with them several times now. And just the other day, $100,000 worth of vitamin C. So that's going out into the hands of people in need across America. Sometimes they distribute to other nations, but they focus on the United States of America. And we will continue to support people in need anywhere that we can. Remember that our slogan is the Health Ranger Store, healing the world with clean food. That's our philosophy. That's what we practice. That's what we preach. That's what we do. We do the lab testing. We manufacture clean, simple ingredients that are authentic and pure and tasty. It's like nothing else that you've ever seen in the processed food industry or the processed storable food industry. And a lot of the survival food out there is just heavily processed garbage. I'm sorry to say, that's just honest truth of what it is. You want real food? Come to healthrangerstore.com. Thank you for your support. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighttown.com and the Health Ranger Store. Take care.